This is WOBC 91.5 FM, Oberlin College and Community Radio. I am Mike the DJ, and the name of my show is The Future Is Now. My guest this week is Martha Cargo, and I have an interview with Martha Cargo, as well as some music that Martha selected. Here we go.
Can you start by introducing yourself to my audience?
Sure. Hello. My name is Martha Cargo. I am a freelance flute player based in Brooklyn, New York.
What are some of your earliest musical memories or experiences?
Oh, that's a good question. I taught myself how to read music when I was little. My dad used to put my hands on the piano in an upright Yamaha when I was a kid. And he always played like Chopin, Bach when I was growing up. And I started playing recorder pretty seriously when I was about 7. And then I played in like recorder club in school. I played Telemann duets with my dad. We had a whole family of recorders at home. I also sang in church starting around that time. I'm Episcopalian. And yeah, that's kind of my earliest time, I guess.
Do you still play recorder?
No, not often. My my air control is gone, so. I can't really play it anymore. But I dream about it. David Hurd, the very famous Episcopalian composer, who was my music director at choir at St. Mary the Virgin in Manhattan, he and I have talked extensively about playing duets in the summertime, but it's never happened.
when did you start with the flute?
I started when I was 9. So my dentist told me that I couldn't, because I was going to have really serious orthodontic work. I had braces for a long time. So she said, well, you can't play anything with a reed and you can't play any brass instruments. So your options for wind instruments are very limited. So I was like, well, I guess I'll play the flute. So I started playing flute when I was 9. I got braces when I was 11 and had them until I was 17. So it was a long time. So yeah, I had braces for 6 years. So, most of my formative flute playing was spent with braces.
Well, is that difficult? I've never had braces, so I don't know. Is that difficult playing with braces?
Yes. Yes, it's very difficult. Yes, it is. It rips up your gums internally. You bleed all the time. It's horrible. Yeah.
Ooh.
It's bad. Yep. It's not pleasant.
Can you describe your musical education?
Sure. So, as I mentioned before, I started in the church singing choir. I started very seriously playing recorder at 7. I played pretty seriously until I started playing flute. And I started taking piano lessons when I was 8. So I took private piano lessons in Suzuki, and then I quit for a year, and then I started with a different teacher until I was 18. And then I started taking flute lessons when I was like 13, I think. And then I started studying very seriously in high school with Allison Potter, who's now a corporate lawyer in Chicago. And she taught at Peabody Prep, but I studied with her privately. And I basically learned all the major repertoire and auditioned for music school after that. So I played in marching band, I played in musical theater. I grew up on the stage in musical theater. I played my first pit when I was 14. I played Pippin. I went to musical theater camp until I was about 15, and then I went to Brevard for flute. That was my first like big festival, Brevard Music Center in North Carolina. And then I went to Tanglewood, BUTI, for the wind ensemble. I was principal flute at the wind ensemble. And then I went to Yellow Barn before I went to Oberlin. So I went to the baby Yellow Barn Chamber Music Festival. And then I went to Oberlin. And then I studied with Michel DeBost, Professor Emeritus of Oberlin. And he was a student of Jean-Pierre Rampal, so I'm kind of like a grand student of Rampal. Right. I went to school with Alice Tessier, who plays with Ice, Alex Conway, who plays second flute in Winnipeg. They were all my classmates. Sorry, my connection cut out. I'm back.
Yeah,
hello.
You were breaking up. I heard you talk about playing at Oberlin and some of the people that were students at the time, and then you sort of cut out.
Yes. At some point decided not to. I'll start back. So I went to Oberlin and studied with Michel Debost, who was a student of Rob Hall's. He's a French flute player. He was amazing. He taught me for 5 years. I also studied early music voice at Oberlin. I sang in the Collegium for almost five years. And then I did a little bit of musical theater when I was there. Not much. I played in some operas. I played in Humperdinck's Hansel and Gretel in 2003. And I did some other, I got more into like contemporary music when I was there. And played the Ligeti Festival at Miller Theater in New York in 2006. And then I went to Paris. So I went to Paris and studied abroad at the Sorbonne, mostly in Paris. And I studied flute with Catherine Contin, the super soloist of the Opéra de la Bastille, the Bastille Opera. And I studied with her privately every week. It was terribly intimidating. I used to cry every lesson. but it changed my life. And I saw her play the Boulez Sonatine with Pierre Laurent Aimard at the Palais Garnier in Paris. And that was like life altering. So, you know, she was just a badass, and I saw her play all the time. And she had 4 kids and was married to the oboist, principal oboist of the opera. And they lived in a house on the outskirts of town. And I used to go to her basement and take lessons.
Wow.
Then when I came back from Paris, I went to SUNY Purchase right away. So I went to Purchase straight out of the gate. I sent a tape, and Tara Helen O'Connor was like, come. And I said, okay. So I moved to New York and I came and I studied at Purchase for 2 years. Did a lot of chamber music, met a lot of good people, did a lot of opera when I was there. Hugh Murphy was a huge fan of mine. I played a lot of opera. and I recorded Jake Heggie's The Tempest for Albany Records when I was there. And yeah. And then I kind of took a summer off and I went to Europe. And I went to a masterclass in France with Mario Caroli, who's like one of the best flute players in the world. And I spent 2 weeks with him and some other international flute players. And we played a bunch of chamber music. We hung out. We played flute all the time. And then what else did I do? Oh, I went to Domaine Forger with the NEM, which is the Nouvelle Entente Moderne from Montreal. I got to work with them. We did lots of chamber music. I recorded a bunch of stuff and worked with them. And then I moved to New York. So I got a full-time job and worked for about 8 months and then realized I needed to go back to school. So I went back to school at Manhattan School of Music, where I did the contemporary program for 2 years. And I finished in 2012. And I've been freelancing ever since. So I've been working as a producer, as a curator, as a brand marketer, as like pretty much anything you can imagine in the last 8 years.
Borgen Project. Did you know that staff members of congressional leaders' offices often keep a weekly running tally of the issues that their constituents are calling or emailing about? The issues that garner the most attention often lead to leaders following up and co-sponsoring bills. The Borgen Project is a national nonprofit organization that lobbies to end extreme global poverty. Our mission is to make global poverty reduction a focus of U.S. foreign policy, because we all do better when we all do better. You can make a 30-second phone call to your representatives by visiting our website, borgenproject.org. That's B-O-R-G-E-N project.org.
This is 91.5 FM, Oberlin College and Community Radio. We heard a piece composed by Giacinto Scalzi entitled Case, and it featured Mario Caroli on the flute. We're going to get back now to the interview with Martha Cargo, and then we'll be hearing some more music. I hope you enjoy.
Wow, you are... You definitely have a pretty filled up resume there with all the experiences. Those sound really wonderful.
Yeah.
Just a bit. What are some of your best memories of Oberlin?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Studio class with Michel DeBost was super intense. Every week we would, he gave us a rep list every year, and we would all buy all the music. There were no iPads then, so we would all buy the music. I would always buy it at Carolyn Nussbaum for a good discount. I think we got 20% off, and I love Carolyn Nussbaum. Shout out to Carolyn Nussbaum. I really love you very much. I've talked to her on the phone a lot. She's the owner, and she talks to her clients on the phone all the time. Anyway, so yeah, I ordered the music from her, and then we would learn all the music, all the etudes. We did the same etudes, the same excerpts every week, all of us in our lessons. And so we would play in studio class every week, Thursday nights, Thursdays at 6 in Kulas. That was it. So we had this great, I forgot her name, Michiko, I think, the accompanist. She was Japanese. She moved to LA. Mm-hmm. And she was our accompanist for studio class all 5 years I was there. And we just like fucking learned rep. And that was like the first time I had a proper, you know, studio of like 18, I think there were 18 of us from all over the world. There were artist diploma students. There were students from China, from Korea. Aaron Jang was one of my studio mates who is married to Denny Boryakov from the LA Phil, formerly of the Met. He is one of the most famous pool players in the world, and he is married to my friend who was my studio mate. Nice. So, yeah. Yep, and who else is famous over there? I don't know. Elise Tessier plays with Ice. She lives in New York. She's a very good friend of mine. We're the same year. And Alex Conway plays principal second in Winnipeg.
Oh, wow.
So those were my classmates.
Yeah, it sounds like...
yeah, it's great. And
What was it like being surrounded by such talented and hardworking people?
I mean, it was sort of motivating. I mean, Michel DeBost was kind of like our grandfather in a lot of ways. And he was old enough to be my grandfather at that time. So it was kind of like the best kind of mentorship because, you know, he'd been kind of, you know, international, like, conservatory winner, you know, concertizing person for his entire life. He basically got out of the, I don't know if you know this story, but he got out of the army in Algeria and he said, well, I kind of want to be a famous flute player. He decided not to go into engineering as he had studied before he went to the army. And he said, I would like to become a famous flute player. And that is what he did. So that's the story. And so I kind of, you know, I had that in common with him. You know, we sort of both have a science background and, a lot of my cousins are engineers, IT engineers, electrical engineers, mechanical engineers. My boyfriend's a mechanical engineer. So I'm surrounded by, you know, phenomenal, you know, scientific minds all my life. And so I think we had that in common. He sort of pivoted, as we would say in 2020, right? He pivoted after he was in the army and fought in Algeria and said, I would like to go win competitions. So he did that. He won Geneva. He won Munich. He won a Rolex, all that shit. You know, he did that. And he basically made a decision that he wanted to be a concertizing flute player and did it. So that's kind of my inspiration, you know? Mm-hmm. I think I felt like, well, if he can do it, so can I. Why the f*** not? Right. So, you know, I just feel like, you know, that was the kind of level at which we were working from day one. He had a high expectation of all of us, and we held ourselves to the same standard and just carried each other along. There was no competition. We didn't care who got what. There was no cattiness. None of us cared what project we got. No, there was none of that. We couldn't afford to because we were working too hard. And I think, you know, Oberlin is a pretty hard place. And to be a double degree student and finish in 5 years is a lot. Mm-hmm. So for me, I just kind of had to stay organized and, you know, just try not to be sick all the time. That's it. So I'm kind of the poster. I become like a alumni poster child for success stories in double degree. Mm-hmm. Like I'm very unusual because most of us don't, you know, pursue both. Mm-hmm. And I get asked all the time by kids, you know, students are like, well, but what made you decide to not go to medical school? I'm like, because you have to make a decision. You can't be a professional musician and go to medical school. It's just not possible. Mm-hmm. Like, you just can't do that. Like, you just can't. So I think you just have to decide at some point what's, you know, going to be your life. And for me, it was music. So there we go.
What are some of your most memorable musical experiences?
In life? Or
yeah.
What?
Yeah, in life. And it can be as a listener or as a performer or any way you...
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So I remember when I was a kid, my parents took me to see Cecilia Bartoli. I don't remember how old I was. Mm-hmm. I was at the Kennedy Center. It was my dad's birthday present. And we went to see Cecilia Bartoli sing Vivaldi. And that was crazy. First of all, she's one of the best mezzos in the world living. Mm-hmm. Second of all, she's crazy. She's a crazy person, like in the best way. And she sings an entire hour of Vivaldi from memory without a conductor. Like, you know, what? Right. So I saw that. And I also saw, my parents took me to see Yo-Yo Ma and the Silk Road Ensemble when I was 14. And that was like, 22 years ago. So this was like kind of before Silk Road had kind of become the thing that it is now. Right. And it was like, I mean, every time I see Yo-Yo Ma, I cry. I don't know what it is about him. I saw him do Dvorak Cello Concerto with Sergio Ozawa at Tanglewood with the Boston Symphony when I was 15. And I was just like, or 16 or something. And I was just like, I can't, like, what am I supposed to say? Like, there's no, and I remember I saw La Traviata, Baltimore Opera, when they were still around. They're not around anymore, but at the Lyric Opera Theater, which doesn't exist anymore. And I went to see Traviata when I was 14. And I was sitting next to this woman who was a patron. She had a rose in her lapel. And she and I were both weeping. And I was like, I guess it's okay if someone who's like over the age of 70 is weeping because I'm crying. Like, and then what's the other one I was going to say? I saw Deborah Voigt sing Salome with Seiji Ozawa with the Boston Symphony before she got her bypass. So this was before she got all the surgery done. You know, she couldn't dance of the Seven Veils, but she could sing. Fucker, she could sing. I was 16. So those are the kind of things that I used to see when I was a kid. Wow. That's the kind of level at which my parents were taking me to see music. Thank you, parents. Right. Thanks, fam.
Now, is your family musical? Very musical?
Yeah, my dad was a pianist his whole life. So he studied piano at UMass Amherst. So my grandfather was in the State Department. He was the only one that didn't become a minister. My great aunt, for whom I was named, was a Methodist minister. So I'm talking about roll Methodist. Yeah. And then my uncle is a honky-tonk blues musician.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
Yeah. You cut out a little bit there. To summarize, You said your dad was a piano player and your mom did.
Yep.
Was
my mom was in choirs growing up.
Okay.
Yes, she was choirs. She was in choirs, a singer.
Gotcha.
Free children's coats from the Lorain County Community Action Agency. No one in the county should go without a coat if we can help it. Coats are now available to anyone in Lorain County living at or below 200% of the federal poverty level. Go to lccaa.net/programs/operation_warm to complete a coat request. Proof of eligibility will be required. All pickups will be contactless. Parents are encouraged to order the next size up to ensure the coats fit. Questions should be directed to Amy Steele at 440-204-3121 or email her at astelle at LCCAA.net.
This is 91.5 FM, Oberlin College and Community Radio. We heard a couple pieces there, the first of which was an excerpt of Klatskow's Figures in a Landscape, and it was performed by Michelle DeBost. We also heard Ligeti's Six Bagatelles, the first and sixth movement, performed by Windscape. Back to the interview with Martha Cargo.
What advice would you have for music students?
That's really good for your teachers, unless you're in pain. Because if you're in pain, you're doing it wrong. So if you get injured as a kid, stop playing. That's my best advice, because I was in pain for the first 5 years I played piano, and I quit. Mm-hmm. Because my Suzuki teacher didn't know how to teach. So she taught me bad technique, and that is no reflection on Suzuki method. That has nothing to do. It's everything to do with her. So right. She was a bad teacher. So yeah, if you're in pain, stop playing. That is not the way. Go to the doctor, get treated, stop playing for 6 months if you have to. You know, you don't have to practice 6 hours a day to be a good musician. I only practiced 2 to 3 hours a day when I was in conservatory. So you do not have to practice. You'll get tendonitis if you practice that much. And you'll develop TMJ. So, like, you cannot – flute players should not practice more than 2 to 3 hours a day, max. And if you're rehearsing, you should practice 1 hour a day. So you should not be playing more than 4 to 5 hours a day professionally, period. Because otherwise you'll injure yourself and you'll end up with an injury that will never go away. So that's what I learned.
Fair enough. I notice also that you have, in addition to your freelance flute activities, you have a consultancy business for social media.
I do.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
I do. Yeah, so I founded a company called Cargo Culture this summer in August. And we started working kind of exclusively with two clients in November and December. We just launched an album for David Whitwell. It's coming out tomorrow on Bandcamp Friday, on Bandcamp exclusively. And it's a visual album with music videos by Paul Notis, who's a... I believe he's Golden Globe Award winning, possibly Oscar winning documentarian. So he, and they work with all BIPOC dancers and dance company and choreographers, which means people of color. So they did an entire like visual album for the record. So all of the tracks are with live dance and anyway, it's great. So, so we did that. I did the press release. I did all the EPK, you know, the electronic press kit for that. Right. And I'm also working with Infrequent Seams, an experimental music label. We've been working together kind of exclusively since October. I'm on the team for that. And I, you know, I'm working on, they're doing a winter stream fest, which is 4 days, 17, 18, 19, 20. Yeah. 4 nights of experimental music streaming on the internet. So we're going to be doing that 17th, 18th, 19th, 20th of December. And I'm doing a set on the last night. So my friend Jonah and I are producing a little half-hour situation at his studio, and then we'll be streaming it as part of the festival. So, yeah.
What are some of the obstacles you've faced throughout your musical career?
Committing to too much. I often will overcommit, and I'm 36 now, and I learn to say no. Mm. So when you're getting started, you say yes to everything, and then you start to compromise the quality of your own work. So then you start to say no, because either it doesn't pay enough or the project isn't right for you at that time. So you have to learn to say no.
Gotcha. How has COVID changed what you've been doing, and do you think it's going to have a lasting effect after the pandemic returns back to normal?
Oh yeah. Very interesting question. So I've been playing in the subway every week since August. So I play in the subway every week with my friend Adam. So he's a violinist and we are known as Duo Phoenix. Plug to Duo Phoenix. And so he and I met each other in 2013 and we just had an idea. We're like, why don't we just get together and play music in the subway? So we've been doing that every week. We missed like maybe 2 weeks out of the last whatever months, 4 months. So we busk. Sorry. Keeps cutting out.
Yeah, you were.
So it goes in New York City.
Yeah, you cut out right as you started to describe your busking experience.
Oh, yeah. So we play in the subway every week, every Wednesday at 11 a.m. And we play Baroque music as Duo Phoenix. That is what we do.
What kind of response do you get from the people?
It's awesome. It's awesome. We usually make like $10 or $15 an hour.
Oh.
So it's pretty good.
Not bad.
I mean, I made $10 yesterday playing solo.
No, not bad.
at Times Square. So that was great. I paid for my lunch, literally. I also have a full-time job at a restaurant, and I'm starting to work this weekend. It's a brand new restaurant. So we're starting to work, and it's awesome.
What sort of future projects do you have? I imagine now is a time sort of to think, well, when things get back to normal, these are some of the things I want to do.
Yes, so correct. So I'm making a record of all commissions called Love Stories. And it is coming out on Infrequent Seams at some point in 2022, probably. We're still trying to figure out the run out for the record because I was supposed to go to Iceland in January, but there's no vaccine. So, everything's on hold pretty much, but, I'm happy to report that, I'm commissioning new stuff with Pieces of Eight, my commissioning project with Ben Larson Cello. So that's coming out, you know, winter, spring next year. We'll have a whole series of eight commissions. We did a whole series of eight in 2016, toured them for 2 years, and then I took a break, and then now we're back in 2021 with a whole bunch of new commissions. I'm planning to do some touring and some gigging with Duo Phoenix. Hopefully we'll get some weddings and, we're going to do a real concert at this month at Roger Smith Hotel. Mm-hmm. We'll get some actual videos online because we don't really have much video because we just play in the subway, so right. Not much material. we're picking it up. New York City is thriving, let me tell you. This place is a hotbed of creativity. All the actors are out of work, but all of us are working. So
it's amazing in a way.
It is.
It really is.
It is.
For what it's worth, Iceland is my dream vacation destination as well. So
yep.
I hope you can make it there sometime soon.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a residency for 2 months in Northwest Iceland, but I can't go because of COVID. So
that had to be tough. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all right though. Still going to happen in 2021. It's all good.
I don't want to keep you out in the cold too much longer.
Okay.
Do you have any sort of parting words for my audience?
Yes. I just wanted to say, first of all, what's up, WOBC? I love you. I had a show in the fall of 06, the Globalized Contemporary, and I'm really thankful that you're putting this this show together, Mike Zeller. It's a really smart show. The stuff that I picked is very specific to my mentors, and I hope you guys like it. It's going to be about, I think it's like 20 to 25 minutes of music. It's a pretty good set, and I'm really proud of it. I curated it this morning, and I thought about it for about 3 days. So it's really reflective of kind of doing now and what I'm thinking about and the kind of teaching style I like and the kind of, it's a good run out of kind of what my influences are right now.
Okay.
So thanks for listening.
Yeah,
I love you, everybody.
Yeah. And thanks for your thoughtful interview and thoughtful selection on that. Usually what I do is I sort of edit everything together. It usually takes a few weeks to do that, and then I'll let you know when it will be airing. What was your show?
Thanks, Mike.
What kind of music did you play?
It was called The Globalized Contemporary. So I talked about the kind of influence of world music and world instruments on contemporary music. So I talked a lot about John Zorn and Coggle, and it was just kind of my first like, I'm curating like 20 things for every hour. So I would go to the library every night, the night before the show, Thursday nights. I would go until 9 p.m., sometimes 10 p.m., depending on how late they were open. And I'd get all my stuff and I'd take it to the studio and I'd do it live. So I never prepped anything in advance. I just cut it. I ran it all myself and did it all at 8 in the morning at WOBC Friday mornings. And Professor Maida, if you're listening to this, you listen to my show every week. And I know you did that. He was my thermodynamics professor.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much. And I hope you
have
a successful year coming up. And take care.
Thank you so much. Happy holidays.
Right, bye-bye.
Bye.
This is 91.5 FM, Oberlin College and Community Radio. I am Mike the DJ. The name of my show is The Future Is Now. And we've been interviewing Martha Cargo and having music that Martha selected. That last piece was from a show that Martha Cargo produced. It featured Claire Chase live at the America Society playing Philippe Lara's solo for bass flute, entitled Meditation and Calligraphy. This is WLBC 91.5 FM, Oberlin College and Community Radio. I am Mike the DJ. The name of my show is The Future Is Now, and my guest this week was Martha Cargo. We ended with a couple of pieces. The first one was from actually a masterclass. It was Debussy's Sonata for Flute, Viola, and Harp, and we heard the first movement from that. That was from a masterclass at Lincoln Center with Tara Helen O'Connor. Following that, we heard a piece by Michelle DeBost, Sonatine for Flute by Sancan. It is my pleasure to have Martha Cargo as my guest. I really enjoyed speaking with her and listening to her music selection. They were all her music selections, except the very last piece. I needed to pad out the hour, so I selected a piece by her former teacher, Michelle DeBost. This is Mike. This is The Future Is Now. This is WOBC 91.5 FM, Oberlin College and Community Radio. I hope you have enjoyed the show. If you are interested in finding out more about this show or have questions, comments, whatever, to keep up with the show, to see the archive of the shows I have available, I do have a Facebook page for this show. And the name of the Facebook page is The Future Is Now. If you simply search for it in Facebook, I'm sure you'll find it. So I don't know who next week's guest is, but I have several interviews queued up. All I need to do is edit them. So until next week, take care, happy fluting, and we will see you next week. Goodbye.